טוב.
We all want to grow closer to Hashem. That's our goal. And in the past 2 weeks, we have identified two tracks of how to do that. One we call the Chovas Ha'Evarim, the things that we do, the actions that we take, the processes. And then the other ones, the other areas, fall under the rubric of the Chovas Halavavos, the internal moral compass, the spiritual fiber within us. So these are going to be our goals of how to connect to Hashem, and these are going to be two channels. The question then becomes, so where do we start? Which is a really good question. And when we start, it does not mean necessarily when we start as a child, because starting could be at any point in our life. At any point in our journey, we're beginning somewhere. So each one of us is, in some way, asking ourselves this question every single day, on a micro level, but on a macro level, of course, it's, so where are we going from here? So if we start on line one, which is now on the page, second column, it starts with the word me'ata, from now. Now he says, Suma aleinu levayar be'ezras Hashem. We need to explore es hayachas, the relationship bein neshama v'guf ba'avoda, between the neshama, the soul, the internal, the hidden, and the guf in our avoda, in our work, in our coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hainu, that is what we said, bein second line, it should be marked there on the page, is it numbered there? Yes. Bein chovas ha'ivarim, the issues of the limbs, and chovas halavavos. So now he sets out the challenge, because the confusion or the question, I wonder if we took a poll where we would fall on this question. He says, on the one hand, mitzad echad, on one hand, the whole goal of living a corporeal existence in this world, we said there should be some more. So, great, thank you. Oh, great. The goal is we are put in this world as a gift to transform it and to make something out of the physical world that we've been given. So on the one hand, you would say, well, let's deal with the physical first. Let's shape it and mold it and transform it and ennoble it. And to do that, that's tuluya b'chovas ha'evarim, with the issues that relate to the limbs, the actions. Third line, shehem ha'mekadshim es haguf, because those mitzvos and those activities and that way of life, they sanctify the body, the physical world. And mesalkim imenu es chelek hara, they remove the impediments to real meaning, and it brings out the spiritual light that exists within the physical world. So you'd say that's going to be our goal. So shouldn't we start with that first? On the other hand, meidach, fourth line, haridafka haneshama, it's specifically the soul, the intangible within, misugeles l'shabeach es HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The soul, the spirit, is what is really oriented to and primed toward praising God. Waking up in the morning, for some, is not the easiest challenge. Now, that's not a challenge for the neshama. The neshama is up, I assume. I haven't asked, but I assume it's up and ready to go at the crack of dawn. My neshama this morning was probably ready at Nate's. I was not anywhere near thinking about davening at sunrise this morning, not even close. I wasn't thinking about anything. Maybe I was, but I'm not aware of it. Where do we find that? Okay, we gotta pick ourselves up. Mitzad the guf. It's the physical aspect of us that is tired or worn out or bitter or not interested or uninspired. The neshama is always inspired. It's a challenge of tapping into it. So he says, on the one hand, well, the goal is to work on the guf. On the other hand, that's the much harder lift. The neshama is primed for, it's looking for spiritual nourishment. It's looking to lead a meaningful life. Ketzad, last line here in the paragraph, yesh lahatim shnei ela, v'bameh yesh lahatchil. Where should we start? It's a very interesting question. Which is the best place to start? Now, usually, I have a friend, someone in the neighborhood, who gave me once a great piece of advice, and it's called swallow the frog. Swallow the frog. Excellent piece of advice, especially for perpetual procrastinators. Swallow the frog means there's something that you don't want to do, like eat a frog. And you have two ways of dealing with that. One is you could push it off till the last possible second and agonize about it all the time. And the second way to deal with that is to just swallow it right away. You know you're going to have to deal with it at some point, so just pick up the phone and make that phone call. And you just get it out of the way. That's swallowing the frog. So you might have thought that maybe the best thing in this circumstance, if you're thinking about how to order everything, is swallowing the frog. Let's put that out there as a possibility. We'll come back to it in a minute. But Rav Volpe has a very fascinating ha'ara here before he gets to his answer, which reflects about us and why we're getting together every week, and it's certainly been helpful to me. Because he says in the next paragraph, "Ein dvareinu amurim b'mi shechotef mitzvos." We're not talking here about people, about a life that is about chotef mitzvos. What does the word lachtof mean? What's that? Yes. To grab. He says, we're not talking here about an approach to life which is about grabbing mitzvos. What does he mean by that? That we're not talking about somebody who goes around grabbing mitzvos, because on the face of it, that would sound like a great idea. But then he goes further. He says, chumra po, astringency over here, hanhaga sham, a practice over there. That kind of approach, in a certain sense, it's great because there's an element of motivation. But what's the challenge and approach that is what he's alluding to? We could call it in English sporadic. It has fits and starts, and you know, you have an inspired moment, which is important, and every moment matters. But then you kind of move away from that and you think about something else, and then we move to a third thing, which is one of the machlas that we struggle from today about being so bifurcated is not the word, because bi is two. We're not like bifurcated. We're like zillionated. We're so mafuzar all over the place. There's an inconsistency to it. There's a lack of a systematic approach. You know, we try one thing and then we say, you know, man, I'm going to try something else a different day, and we keep trying new things, but we don't have a systematic approach. He says that is not what we're talking about. He said he's alluding to the fact that if we really want to reach Hashem, if we want to take it seriously, we have to take it seriously in a systematic approach. He says, "Ela b'mi sheyodea sha'adam tzorech livnos atzmo va'avodaso." We have to know that we need to build ourselves. So a building has a plan. So it has an architect. It has an engineer. It has a contractor. All of those stages go into coming up with what is the best plan. What's going to be the most effective plan? It's not enough just to say, you know what, we're going to build a new house, and the first day I'm going to come up with one idea, and the next day I'm just going to move to a totally different plan. You can't operate like that. You can't build a business like that. You can't build a life like that. So he says there has to be a plan. And then we have to stick to that plan. But the first step is to recognize that it does require a systematic approach. Livnos atzmo, to build, and you notice he puts it in the block writing. Livnos, to build ourselves. We have the capacity to build ourselves from the bottom up, and that v'chila chasidus yesh yesod. There is a foundation to chasidus, to piety, v'la avoda, and to avoda, to really growing and working, shoresh, there is a root. What is he doing with that? He's playing on the first phrase that appears in the book called Mesilas Yesharim, the path of the just. So his first phrase starts with the four letters, Yud and He and Vav and He, which is the name of God, the four-letter name of God. That Yud and He and Vav and He is Yesod HaChasidus, the building block, the base of chasidus, literally means piety, viz, shoresh, and the root of all avoda, of growth, is, etc. He says the first thing is to recognize there are things that are basic. And then on top of the basic things, you add the next layer and the next layer. If we don't recognize that there are certain most basic priorities, so then we're not going to have a building that's going to be sound. Right? We have to think about, what are the basic things in our life? What are the fundamental blocks that can't move? And everybody's going to calibrate that differently because everybody's neshama is calibrated differently. So for some people, davening is a basic, for them, it's a basic building block, and their avodas Hashem is going to build from there. So that's going to be their foundational step. For other people, it might be somehow connecting to nature. I know people, they're very into nature. That's a way that they connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They're so into nature, they sleep outdoors in nature. It's an amazing thing. They choose to do that. Amazing. So that if that is a person's, that's the root of where they're coming from, so that when they make their plan of how they're going to build their spiritual life, that's going to be at the foundation. That's going to be something they're going to build off of. So the first thing, before we talk about what the sequential steps are, Rav Volbe is saying is just we have to know there's a plan. There has to be a prioritization. And it can't just be helter-skelter that, you know, I'm going to think about this, and then I'm going to think about something else. Everybody's got to make their personal plan. The best time to do that is Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippurim. That's a good time. What if we didn't get around to it because our life was totally upside down? Today. Any day is a good day to make a plan. Every day is a good day to make a plan. That's why it's interesting that the word Hayom, when it appears in the Chumash, sometimes, according to Chazal, refers to Rosh Hashanah, and then other times it just refers to today, because every day can be like the first day. The fact that yesterday I had no plan and I was totally lost, it doesn't mean I can't take 5 minutes and come up with a new plan. And even if we don't take that opportunity today, we should know that every Rosh Chodesh is meant to give us that opportunity. Usually we blow by Rosh Chodesh, but in this group, Rosh Chodesh has unique significance for women, so it's a good opportunity. Rosh Chodesh is, again, people do a special, what's called Yom Kippur Katan on Erev Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh has special karbonos, which we don't have today, which are about this same pattern as the regalim. It's a new beginning. So we should never feel like, oh, we missed it. If a person didn't get to their annual checkup with their physician on their 12th month mark, guess what? You can still go the next week, and you can still go the next week. So even if we didn't sit down on Rosh Hashanah and say, you know, we're going to build our schedule. It's great. This is Parshas Vayera. So all of that has quieted down. So now it's the time. So the question is, where do we start? So Rav Volbe says something interesting. Let's go to the second line in the third paragraph, which on your numbers should be 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, maybe, the word Reishis. Rav Volbe says, Reishis, you know where to start. Avodas Hashel Adam hi. It's not actually with swallowing the frog in this respect. It's Lemashesh Ruchanius. To Lemashesh, to feel or to make concrete spirituality. One of the things we mentioned previous was the challenge of spirituality, that it is Eino Nira. You don't see it. So he says, actually, we should not start with the Chovas Ha'evarim. Don't start with the things, the measurables. Rather, we should actually prioritize the Livnos Es Pnimiyuso, Vehi Ha'avoda B'Chovas Ha'Levavos. Says that the first thing is actually to focus on the inside. Interesting. There's an old story of two men who come to shul with their sons. These two men come to shul. One of them, I don't want to stereotype, but one of them is very inspired in his davening, and he's mislaiv, and he has his talises flying, and he's intense, and he's davening with kavana, and he's singing, and he's so enthusiastic. And the kid who's next to him, this story takes place when there weren't groups, and the kid theoretically could have belonged in shul. All the caveats aside, separating from the shul issues. So the kid was next to him, and I could totally envision this happening. My grandparents, Aleihem HaShalom in Yerushalayim, they davened in a shul that was, it was in Kiryat Moshe, that it was like very mesudar. You know, it was a proper shul. And the guy's davening, he's davening with so much eslavas, and his kid is running totally wild, out of control in the shul. He's all over the place. He's climbing on the bench. The father is davening. The kid is doing handstands. It's not like today where sometimes, unfortunately, people bring their kids to shul, and if they don't fit into groups or whatever, they have a little gan that goes on with toys and snacks and everything, which is a whole separate question. This is like not, there's no snacks, there's no toys. The kid's just all over the place. And then there's another guy on the other side of the shul who sits there the entire time next to his kid, and he says, shh, shh, sit down, quiet. He takes him out every 10 seconds. He sits him down. He keeps telling him to be quiet. Again, keeping the shul issues out of this analogy. So finally, the guy who's a little bit more uptight, he finally says to the other guy whose kid is going bananas in the shul, he says to him, can you please do something with your kid? It's totally out of control. So the second guy says to the first guy, he says, let me ask you a question. What do you want to see in 30 years? Do you want to see that in 30 years, your kid is going to daven with his slavas, with connection, with meaning, and maybe his kid is going to be floating around? Or do you want in 30 years that your kid is going to spend the entire davening telling his kid to be quiet? Meaning, are we focusing on the inside, on the experience, or are we making sure that all the measurables, we meet those things? But then we're just, if we start, says Rav Volbi, with the Chovas HaIvarim, which is somewhat counterintuitive, but if we start with the Chovas HaIvarim, are we just going to create a cycle where it's all about doing the things, and then the kids get older and they do the things, and then we all just keep doing the things, but it's all not alive? That's the question. So Rav Volbi says, and this is an interesting thing, because I didn't grow up like this, or maybe I didn't think about it like this, and I don't think that in our house we thought about it like this. But now I'm thinking, wait a second. Yes, we do need to train ourselves to check the boxes, but is that the focus? Is it that we get them and we get ourselves to do the things that eventually, if we do the things enough, we'll be inspired at some point? Or, and this kind of came up at some point last year when one of our alumni, young members of our community, who doesn't live here now, but this young woman was in this group, and she kind of raised this as an observation, this question. Or do we need to figure out ways to focus on the Chovas HaLevavos, on the Avodah Shebalev first? Then we train ourselves. That's a very hard thing to do. In a certain sense, that's swallowing the frog. It's much harder. How do we capture and convey Ruchnius? How do we do that? It's much easier to bring a kid to shul, to take a little girl, put her on the bench and say these words. You can say it. Either you said it or you didn't. That's what we do. We said the words or we didn't say the words. But it's different to convey to a little girl what it means that there is a God and God is with you, and God sometimes answers what you have to say, and sometimes he just listens quietly. And what does it mean? You can't picture God. That's a much harder thing to cultivate. But Rav Volbi says that's got to come first. Some of us are familiar with an awesome mashal, one of my favorite mashalim. I heard this from a mentor of mine, a colleague of mine, many years ago. I went on a program for teenagers. So we were a couple of college students. We had some young men from YU, and we had some young women from Stern, and we all went to this program, and we had groups of high school students. So we were working with them by grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. So we ran these retreats out in the countryside. It was a very exciting opportunity for me because it was in Australia. So how often do you have a chance to go to Australia? So it's a very long trip to get from Baltimore to New York to San Francisco to Melbourne by way of Sydney. By the time we got there, it was... So we're running these seminars, and I still remember we had a for us, it was the summertime. So for those kids, it was the wintertime. And we had a kumsitz outside for these students. And this one of the guys, he told the following story. Some of you are familiar with it, but review it because it's so important. He says there was a lawsuit that was once brought before a judge, a terribly tragic lawsuit, that in the middle of a cornfield somewhere, there was an accident. There was a crossing between a freight train, a railroad, and a country dirt road. And at this crossing, there was a car that was crossing. There was a pickup truck that was crossing. And unfortunately, Loalenu, the railroad, came along, the CSX enormous freight train, and just terribly demolished. And the lawsuit was from the family of the farmer driving the pickup truck against the freight company, saying that they're responsible for the wrongful death, nebuch, of this poor person. And so the case came to trial in the courtroom. And who is going to be the star witness of this trial? The star witness of the trial is the lantern operator at the crossing. Because the way that it worked was that the railroad company hired a little guy, a farmer, who knew the schedule of the railroad, and every day, exactly at the time at night when the railroad was coming, this was before they had railroad lights and everything, the guy would go out, and there was a little platform, wooden platform with a booth, summer, winter, didn't matter, and he would stand outside and he would wave a lantern. And he would wave the lantern near the crossing, and that would indicate to all of the farmers that there was going to be a train coming. They should stay off the tracks. They shouldn't ride on this path. So Vayihi Hayom, it was the day that this lantern man, the farmer, the lantern man, goes up to testify, and into the courtroom walk five Italian custom suits on one side of the desk, and they're all ready with all of their questions, and they have to defend the corporation. On the other side, Nebuch is the family of this poor victim of this terrible accident. And so the little farmer, the lantern man, takes the seat, and he's sworn in, and the attorney, the lead attorney, gets to question him, and the defense attorney, the prosecutor, everybody gets to question him, and they all go back to the same story. Do you remember where you were on the night of such and such a night? He says, yes. He says, what time exactly was it? He says, it was exactly at this and this time. I got out of bed. I did my same routine that I had every night. I went to my post. I held my lantern up. He says, well, what did you do with the lantern? He says, exactly what I do every night. I pulled it like this and like that, forward, upwards, down, back and forth, back and forth. So that's what it is. So they end the cross-examination. The judge adjourns the case for the moment, and everybody shuffles out of the courtroom. So the defense attorneys for the corporation, they come over to this farmer, this lantern man, who's wearing overalls and a plaid shirt and scuffed up boots. They say to him, "Ah, you did a great job out there today. You held it together. You did a great job." And the little simple man says to them, "Oof. You know, it's a good thing they didn't ask me one question. Was the lantern lit?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Baruch Hashem, it's only a mashal. But that mashal is perhaps what Rav Volbi is getting at, which is the chovas ha'ivarim are very good and they're very essential. But if we're just doing the things, but there's never any light inside of them, so then that's difficult to say that we've accomplished our goal. So he says that even though, yes, we need to do exercise to make sure that we can move the lantern in all different directions, because if a person doesn't exercise their muscles and their muscles atrophy and they never create that structure for themselves, so they're never going to be able to accomplish that. And it's not easy to get out of bed and to do the things that we want and need and are really deep down inside looking to accomplish, to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world with the Chovas HaYivarim. But the first thing it says Revolvi is to make sure that it's lit up. You know, what do we really want? What really gives us life, gives us chiyus? Where is our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where is God? If God is alive in everything that we're doing, so then that's going to transform everything that we have. And in that respect, we have to really dig down into what does it mean that our life has a spiritual quality to it, that there is a neshama, that that neshama has a role to play in everything that we're doing. So in our challenge, Rav Volbi suggests that the first thing is to start with this avoda hatzfuna. And then through that, through the development of this hidden avoda, of thinking about the, excuse me, the mitzvos temidios, the regular ongoing internal mitzvos, whether that's avas Hashem, or yiras Hashem, or yichud Hashem, how much is God a part of our conversation? Those questions, in terms of a consciousness, those are the issues that we need to deal with first. And after that, third line to the end of this paragraph, ubezeh, after that, yochol lahamshich ruchni yazu, you can bring this spirituality, gam letoch avodaso hagluya, into the outside, the letoch kiyam chovas ha'ivarim, into the things that we're doing, ubezeh yagia letachliso. But if we don't have the Ribbono Shel Olam as part of the conversation at the beginning, at the outset, so then the chovas ha'ivarim, he says, are going to be lacking. So the goal is going to be first to focus on the internal, on the chovas ha'levavos, on the spirit, on the ruchnius, and after, or obviously concurrent, but after we begin that process, then we could talk about developing the chovas ha'ivarim as well. Hope you have a great week. Thank you all for joining.